This was a scale in regards of the longest option assessment for the various areas of status quo, no development, nothing, then only quail rise extension for the part of A quail rise plus the connection to Hanson Road up to the west, and then as well the surrounding area, development area C. And going through the slide, I'm going further down because I think it's too much to go to each of the slides in general. Here you see what we have done in regard of the assessment of advantages and disadvantages to all of these proposals. And then option two was to minimum with advantages, disadvantages. Option three, less ambitious. And option four is a preferred one I just showed to you, which could get a yield of around 1,150 residential lots in this area, which will have then a high density residential development as part of this assessment. Again, the more ambitious option was then as well including area B in the assessment. This was then coming up with around about 1,400 units. But from a financial perspective, it was not stacking up compared to option A on its own. So the conclusion was, although more effective in terms of the yield, this option is less efficient in return on investment in infrastructure. It requires larger investment overall, specifically from a transportation perspective. And it's also less likely to be achievable against the five critical success factors we have identified. And this is where we were coming up with option. So we are going back to the top slide. So our preferred option and the funding we are receiving is for the area from the roundabout at Hawthorne Drive to Quail Rise. So close to the east of Galway.
Please work long to read your summary. And
thank you very much. To this.
Keep them.
I have provided evidence for Queenstown Lakes District Council on infrastructure matters for various rezoning requests in the Queenstown area of the district. I have referred to and relied on Mrs. Kimberly Banks' strategic evidence for this hearing, specifically in terms of the type and density of zones that the council has recommended through its right of reply in the substantive hearing and that are being pursued by submitter. As stormwater is addressed at the time of subdivision or actual development and is required to comply with the council's requirements under the subdivision code of practice, is not being assessed individually in relation to the rezoning. Of the submissions received, some were quite vague in terms of what was being proposed, and only a few provided infrastructure details for assessment. This has made the task of assessing the infrastructure effects more difficult. For some rezoning, more information has been provided through submitter evidence, which I have considered in my rebuttal evidence and in some instances has satisfied me. In assessing each of the site-specific submissions, I have considered three key points for water and wastewater. A, the serviceability of the area, whether it is anticipated that the site would connect to the water and wastewater network, hence the ease and cost of servicing to the expected level of service, including ongoing operations, maintenance costs from additional facilities. D, the location of the area in terms of elevation, whether the area will have adequate water pressure and can drain wastewater under gravity, and if it is adjacent to similarly zoned land to support efficient servicing of the area, and if the area will be serviced by the network, whether there are any capacity issues, and if so, whether there are projects to resolve them within the long-term plan, LTP, or the related matter, master plans, which are currently being revisited and built to form the 2008 LTP program. It has been noted in the submissions where projects that will mitigate capacity constraints are based on the master plans rather than the current LTP. In the urban area, connection to council services is assumed. In general, water supply is less of an issue for submitter requests for more intensified residential zoning, where a residential zoning is already proposed, because the same FW2 for firefighting level of firefighting supply is anticipated. Where zoning of a higher fire risk is proposed, that increases the anticipated firefighting requirements, for example, commercial requiring FW3, the water model results are used to assess the ability to adequately service these proposed areas. The zoning submissions are generally opposed where there is an increased level of service from residential to commercial or visitor accommodation, and the models show that not capacity to meet this expectation for it is spatially outside the current model results. For properties at higher elevations, additional water reservoirs or booster pump stations may be required to provide water supply to those houses. Council would prefer efficient infrastructure networks that rationalize facilities and would not promote an increase in the number of facilities to supply water at this higher elevation because of ongoing operation and maintenance costs. The effect of the wastewater load and water demands from the submitted rezonings have been assessed using the wastewater and water model results. Where the model shows that there is currently no capacity within the system, I have considered whether that will be resolved through planned projects in the upcoming annual plan reviews and the long-term plan period. I also identify where LTP projects are required and provided for to enable the rezoning, for example, the upgrade of the plant. It should be noted that if council upgrades are required to service the site, the time of this will be based on the time frame of the related LTP project or as negotiated. Confirmed rezoning in the PDP will not mean the project is prioritized. In some cases, there are issues, but the change is quite minor in terms of additional capacity requirements. It is much more efficient to service new developments where capacity already exists. In my opinion, it is not in the council's best interest for its water and wastewater networks to extend further into currently zoned rural land outside the urban limits. This will result in increased operational, maintenance, and renewal costs for QLDC over the long term. I do not support the ad hoc and inefficient extension of infrastructure, particularly where I understand there is sufficient available land within the UGB to serve further residential growth. rule and rule lifestyle zoning outside the scheme boundary are not anticipated to connect with the council network, but be privately serviced on-site at the developer's cost. These types of developments will not affect the council's infrastructure network, nor ongoing maintenance costs, and therefore I generally do not oppose this type of development. My opinions on wastewater and water are based on my knowledge of the network and the council's computerized water and wastewater models. Growth models feeding into the water and wastewater models are currently being updated to reflect the PDP, and minor amendments are anticipated. The water and wastewater models give a mathematical representation of the infrastructure networks, pipes, pumps, reservoirs and other assets, and the results produce information about pressure, flow and pipe capacity throughout the network. I have summarized the significant submissions that I propose in my evidence and in my rebuttal. Group 1B, Middleton Family Trust 338. Middleton Family Trust has sought in their evidence that 53 hectares of land be rezoned from rural to LDR and 18 hectares to rural residential. It has been estimated that this could yield in 1,105 additional residential lots. The area is located between Lake Johnson and the Shotover River. This area is not serviced and is outside scheme boundaries as well as the UGB. It is surrendered by notified rural land. I initially opposed the rezoning because no details about servicing was provided, but the submitted evidence provided details about how the anticipated increased water and wastewater flows and demand from this rezoning would be serviced. This includes a proposed connection to the QODC network for water and wastewater. Section 1.5 of the services assessment report states the peak wastewater flow from the development in accordance with the development standard is 48 liters per second. Section 5.2 refers to an existing 300 millimeter foul sewer main that extends from Hawthorne Drive and has approximately 57 liters per second capacity. It appears, based on the services assessment report, that Mr. Hansen intends the development to connect into the existing main, as no other option has been stated. In summary, I continue to oppose this rezoning on wastewater grounds because insufficient detail has been provided confirming there is adequate capacity in the existing regulation without upgrade of existing infrastructure beyond what is already planned. The existing wastewater main has been designed to take flow from other existing and planned developments. It is not clear what the spare capacity is, but in my view, it cannot be assumed that 84% of the existing 300 millimeter diameter main capacity is available for this development. Group 1C, Mount Crystal 150. Initially, Mount Crystal Limited thought that 1.24 hectares of land be rezoned from LDR to MDR, which was estimated to yield 15 additional residential lots. The submitter also thought within the primary submission that 1.49 hectares of land be rezoned from LDR to HDR, and it has been estimated that this part of the relief could yield 65 additional residential lots. This totals to 80 lots. The submitter's evidence amends the relief, proposing the total size of 2.7 hectares be rezoned to HDR. Mr. McCartney's evidence considered that the developable area within the site would be 1.7 hectare due to geotechnical reasons, which could yield an estimate of 60 additional residential lots. The area is located on 634.7 roads to the east of Gold Rush Way. Currently, the site is not serviced, but is within the water and wastewater scheme boundaries and the UGB. The surrounding land is notified LDR and HDR. Based on the modeling results, I did not oppose the rezoning to MDR from an infrastructure perspective, but it is expected this area is able to be serviced with minimum upgrades. However, I oppose the rezoning to HDR for the bottom of the show. There is no not adequate infrastructure plan in the LTP to service SW3 firefighting supply. HDR strongly assumes a higher fire risk that increases the anticipated firefighting requirements from MDR firefighting SW3 firefighting supply. Additional detail was provided in the submitted evidence, but there was nothing that resolved how the site was going to be serviced to an SW3 supply. I continue to oppose this rezoning on firefighting grounds. Buddy Corporate 22362389. I have to make a note of the submitter 398. Now Buddy Corporate 22362 had a wrong number in his rebuttal, and we use now the correct submitter number in this summary. The Buddy Corporate 22362 has thought that 10.8 hectares of land be rezoned from LDR to MDR. It has been estimated that this could yield 130 additional residential lots. The area is located on Gold Peak Heights and also includes Gold Peak Hill, Stone Ridge Place, Woodlands Close, and Minor Lane. The area is currently serviced with public and private infrastructure. Some parts of the current site are already developed to MDR densities. The area is currently within the water and wastewater scheme boundary and the UGB, and the surrounding land is notified LDR and rural zoning. No details were provided about how the anticipated increased flows and demands from this rezoning would be serviced. For water servicing, the existing mains are currently modeled as only just sufficient. The modeling results show there are some areas of higher headload and low pressure. Increasing the density of this area without pipe upgrades could worsen these results. The wastewater model results show there is no spare capacity in the downstream network as a main force to Franklin Road. There is no project to resolve this in the LTP. The submitter provided evidence, but it did not address how the capacity constraints would be resolved to service the proposed increased density. I continue to oppose the rezoning to MDR from an infrastructure perspective because there is not sufficient capacity in the existing network to take increased flows both for wastewater and water. Therefore, upgrades would be required that are not an efficient solution. Group 2, Antra Land, LTD 677. Antra Land has thought that 851 hectares of land be rezoned from rural to rural visitor. The rural visitor zone is an operative zone that is not part of stage 1. The submitter has not provided enough information about the proposed development in my view to enable an assessment of the The site is Woodbine Station, a property of approximately 800 hectares. are located in January along the true right bank of the Dan River and the northwest bank of Lake Mississippi. The station includes land within and surrounding Finland. The surrounding land is zoned rural with an expectation of the township to Finland. The area is not connected to county water and wastewater supply. The site is outside the UGB and not anticipated to be serviced by county infrastructure. Three water infrastructure servicing would be required on-site at the developer's cost. It is unclear what the proposed development would be and how it is proposed to be serviced. Large parts of the site are within the floodplain and or are susceptible to liquefaction. The ORC Otago Water Plan Change 6A map identified the area as part of the nitrogen sensitive large lake catchment area. Any development will need to use advanced treatment systems to treat wastewater. Overall, I oppose the rezoning to rural visitor from an infrastructure perspective because it potentially allows large high density development in a rural area and it is unclear how servicing of this site is planned and if it is feasible given site constraints. Not enough information has been provided in the submission to enable me to assess the effects of the proposed rezoning. Middleton Family Trust 393. Middleton Family Trust has thought that 114 hectares of land may be rezoned from rural to airport mixed use. The site is located on top of Queenstown Hill. Existing access is from Franklin Road or Checkerbeach Road. Potential future additional access has been identified on George Road. The land is outside the Queenstown Three Water Scheme and the UGB and the surrounding land is on rural. The site is elevated and 2 kilometers from the Queenstown Three Water Scheme. The applicant has not indicated how the land will be served or what land use rules will be included in the proposed new zoning, although I note there is an airport mixed use zone in the CEP and they may wish to use similar provisions. It is assumed that the intention would be to connect to the county networks. In summary, I oppose the rezoning to airport mixed use from an infrastructure perspective because this is a substantial increase in load and demand which will require an upgrade of the existing infrastructure and will also require additional facilities that will have an ongoing maintenance burden. Thank you.
Mr. Cooper, do you have any questions?
Yes, one of the very basic ones, Mr. Glasner. Is the service area aligned with the urban growth boundary?
That's our intent.
Oh, okay. Is there a map where I can see the extent of the service area? Because that's the one thing I didn't have when I was reading your script. Well, where can I find one?
We have maps drawn up here where you can see the urban growth boundaries, and we are working as well currently, as mentioned in my evidence, on various master plans for water and for wastewater, and as well we are upgrading at the moment our plan and our 30-year view on the infrastructure for districts. And this will be a big part of our assessment through the LDP process, which is for us just started.
Yes, you know all of that, but I just wanted a simple thing which was like a finger plan, you know, to scratch around like that. So
yeah,
I'm
watching this post only at the moment, the boundary line in itself around the Queenstown area. We have put as well on the scheme boundaries for wastewater and water supply, so you can see this one around here. So which are part of, they are nearly covering directly the line of the cross boundaries as well.
And how fluid are those scheme boundaries in response to, say, proposals for zoning change?
Mm-hmm. We have a policy in place, council to find up to a policy in regards of water supply scheme boundary adjustment, and it needs to go through the council process if they are not achieving the requirements we listed up. And one of the main ones, if they are sitting out of the boundaries at all, it needs to be the council decision to extend water supply and wastewater scheme boundaries.
Thank you. I had another question, and it goes back to your evidence in chief, where you list the number of zones, and you were talking about capacity and estimations, and you give approximations like, you know, the number of square metres per lot and so on. When you were working out the efficiency of servicing,
yep.
did you rely on the council's plan of estimates and then
yes.
separate reports, or on those numbers in your evidence in chief?
This was all relying on the estimates from a rezoning perspective, how much could be the yield for this rezoning area.
Okay. So you went back to the council's planning reports, but correct. Relying on that.
Yes,
excellent.
Probably the case.
Thank you. And I think probably I only have one other general question. And that was, we heard yesterday from Mr. Osborne, and you were here, about the
yes.
extent to which there is an excess of land supply for housing and commercial, perhaps not for industrial, in the district. When you talk about efficiency in your evidence, it seems to me you're talking about engineering efficiency.
Yes.
But what is it within your area of expertise to comment on whether it's efficient to service areas of zoned land that are not actually becoming available?
My assessment is really based on how much can a pile take care of.
Yeah.
For example, from a pile size perspective,
yeah.
how can our wastewater pump station, water pump station, are they built to the increased volumes coming up out of a rezoning perspective? And do we have already identified the areas because they are in the urban growth boundaries and we know that something is coming and we are bringing this forward throughout the LTP? Or are these areas who are totally new zone which we have to address then in future stages? So it's quite a balance act, and I think we have a little bit of discussion around hand-me-downs and checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
Checkpoint is currently not serviced by council, not in the area of wastewater and water supply. Hand-me-downs was coming to council and asked if we could service the area. Well, we agreed with them to provide two hand-me-downs to service in regard of wastewater and water supply. In this discussion, Jack's Point was coming to us as well now and asking if their town center development could be connected to this wastewater stream as well. So it's a little bit fluent, so we are working with the developers and try to help out where we can and where we see efficiency in regard of extending network out in areas which were not serviced in the past.
I was mulling over the discussion we had yesterday about a defendable urban boundary. We had the discussion in the context of ONLs, and I was just wondering, it would appear to me that it was not safe to rely on infrastructure as one of the lines of defense because
yes.
you can adjust it. Thank
absolutely.
You. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chen.
Mr.
Firstly, the summary just now, the Middleton land struck me that it's very close to that area you're up today under the HIF. Does that have any implications for it? You're talking about that sewer, that 300 millimetre sewer, which
oh, yeah,
presumably is down in Franklin Road in the vicinity. So does that, would that have to be upgraded, for example, to deal with option A?
There would be two options to it. we had just at the start from the housing infrastructure perspective the clear rise application up there. There would be a possibility as well if we could identify that Quail Rise build a separate sewer down to our wastewater treatment plant at the Shotawa River that is just a K away or less, that we would increase the new pipe not going then through Hawthorne Drive going parallel to the state highway down to the Shotawa River, there would be a possibility, but this would not pass what the submitters showed us, so this is why I have declined it, because it was not clear what he really wants to achieve. But there is definitely an option to bring a sewer pipe parallel to state highway down to our wastewater treatment plant on the way of the river.
So there are options, but you just simply don't know enough about them yet.
Correct, because when I provided my evidence, the result out of the housing infrastructure was not out in the public, and we weren't aware that we are successful or not successful. This is why I was not quite sure, and this is why I posted it here.
And we're still not quite sure.
Correct, it's not a given yet, so we have to go to an internal business case, and we have a meeting with MB just on Thursday.
I just have to check your other statements to be able to see whether I had the other questions. General question. The chairman alluded to it, and there are areas of land which are already zoned and vacant, not developed. And I'm thinking at the moment of Kelvin Heights.
From our close park.
Yeah. But do you have capacity to service those areas if they, I'm not talking about ones that are being asked for at Kelvin Heights, but the areas that are already zoned and undeveloped, do you have capacity for all of that?
Not currently in the system, but it's part of our LCP process. We have already identified in the past projects where we need to upgrade, and we are in contact at the moment with the main landholder out there who would like to develop further sites, and he's provided us as, at the moment as well with land to put a reservoir on a higher level to service up to the stone area, which we couldn't do at the moment, so our reservoir site is too low to really provide a service or a level of service to the other level of the already zoned area at Kelvin Heights.
And Remarkables Park, is that served?
Remarkables Park is serviced. Remarkables Park has built a brand new sewer main going on the fringes directly to our connection point beside the Visa to the wastewater treatment plant. And everything else is identified in the long-term plan, and upgrade on an existing wastewater pump station is currently planned and designed, so from this perspective we are good to go.
Discussing the amount of land, you've referred in paragraph 29 to the regional water plan transit site.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if you could help us, and you talked about the 19 cents of large lake. Is it the entire document of the lake that is within the
Everything is in correct from an ORC perspective. They would like to protect the waterways and everything, which includes as well the farming perspective at the current state, is identified in plan change 6A and has nitrogen loading as a discharge or runoff from this land into the lake.
So that means, for instance, with the Jardine land, they would have to meet that with their wastewater discharge as well. So that really is a matter for us to raise with them, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm totally with you on this one. This is what I raised with them as well. This is as well why I'm not quite sure, and sometimes when the people are starting building an infrastructure without a council control or no control at all, or as a permitted activity close to a lake environment or waterways, I'm a little bit concerned, because people may be not doing their maintenance on their systems as they should be, and we are getting runoff out of these on-site wastewater systems uncontrolled into our waterways, into our lake, and our lake is our potable water source, and this is my major concern.
Where I come from in Christchurch, the two surrounding rural districts, Waimakariri and Selwyn, the Kyoto, you know, these people, they've been accepting private schemes for a very long time, and the tide has turned, they won't accept them anymore.
Yep. This is the reason why I know Andrew Dacre, who is doing a lot of on-site work out in the area. I had just a meeting with them in Christchurch 4 weeks ago to get an understanding how they are managing their systems. And we are concerned around this one. He has done an assessment and done a report, and it's shocking to see what's happening with these
problems. Okay, and they won't even accept it for rural residential. Mm. All the rural residential has to be close to the council.
So, looking at, there's a number of others. For instance, they want the station to be proposed on the Halfway Bay, those sorts of places we should be looking at. Yeah, those instances too. Thank you. The only other query I had was, in your main evidence, you said you considered that rural residential development adjoining urban areas should connect to the wastewater system. And then here in paragraph 10, you seem to be saying the opposite. Is that is it a horses for courses comment?
In general, I would like to get areas connected where it doesn't put a lot of constraint of the council network itself. For me personally, from an infrastructure, it doesn't matter. I want to protect the environment, protect the health of the people. So with on-site wastewater system, and sometimes they have them as well, on-site water systems with bores, roof runoff, and specifically with private bores, as well as the activity, I'm concerned with the combination of not well maintained wastewater system that I can get a public health issue. Therefore, I really urge, where it's possible, to connect wastewater away from these areas where possible.
Have you had the experience with private systems that after a while, after a few years, the owners started trying to maintain them and come to the council and ask them to take over?
We have just done it last year, for example, Katrona. Katrona has in total three private schemes, and we have taken over one of the private schemes and connected another one. So there are only one private scheme left, and the other one is owned by council and has connected a third party. So to help out and get good control over these systems.
Just while Commissioner Hawke does that, I take up that the upgrades to the shop over plant and part to achieve the nitrogen discharge levels that the regional council are imposing.
Yeah, well, we have a staged resource content in place for the shallow wastewater treatment plant, and this is based on reduced nitrogen levels over the next 15 to 20 years. And we are just working already on the next stage of upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Because anticipate is closed now out of the HIP infrastructure fund, so with Lady Smile probably and Quail Run, we are getting more load and more flow into the plant than anticipated 3 years ago.
No, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Mahatma's office to come up forward. So, Mr. Buxton, so Mr. Manager and Mr. Bates. Dr. Reid does have a strategic part at the start of the summary, so she will read that through. If you do have any questions on that,
I think
starting
with Dr. Lee. Okay. Yes, Dr. Lee. Yes, I think it would be useful if we got the copies of the GD matters and questioned that before we walk into the details. Okay. I'd certainly look for detail on a case-by-case basis.
Yes, I think
that. Quite a lot of
changes on the Queenstown, Dunwoodie and Kingston areas of the Queenstown Lakes District. As I've noted previously, the district includes some of the most spectacular landscapes in the country. These landscapes are valued in their own right as the location and as the location of residential, sorry. I should have read this to myself earlier. These landscapes are valued in their own right as the location of residential and recreational activities. They also provide the settings for the Queenstown, Kingston and Glenorchy urban areas. Consequently, this part of the district differs from the Upper Tooth Basin in that all these urban areas abut outstanding natural landscapes directly, with areas of lesser landscape value being limited in extent and localised in distribution. The determination of landscape classification boundaries is not an exact science. Landscapes in the main do govern one another over areas of transition. An exception to this is where there is a clear distinction between two geological or geomorphological features. These boundaries often coincide with changes in topography and or gradient, and consequently with changes in vegetation cover and other landscape qualities. Many of the submissions for type of address are located on land identified as ONL in the PDP. Most of these rezoning submissions do not specifically consider the appropriate locations of the ONL boundary, as it's often simply contiguous with the notified zone boundaries. This is particularly the case around the margins of the Queenstown and Kingston townships. Objective 6.3.1 of the CDP requires that, quote, landscapes are managed and protected from the adverse effects of subdivision use and development, unquote. Policy 6.3.1.6 states, quote, when locating urban growth boundaries or extending urban settlements through plan changes, avoid impinging on outstanding natural landscapes or outstanding natural features, and minimise degradation of the values derived from open rural landscapes, end quote. I have interpreted this impinge to mean, make, quote, make an impact, have an effect, rather than its second meaning, which is in quote. A consequence of this approach is that I consider the potential impact of development being allowed to impinge on the ONL surrounding Queenstown particularly, to be low or very low in some instances and high and unacceptable in others, depending entirely on the location and context.
Questions on this? More general?
Fundamentals of methodology, Dr. Bing. In identifying the ONL start with, I understand the element of evaluation that includes subjectivity. What information have you got about the values and appreciation of landscapes from the people's point of view that contributes to your assessment?
Very good question. Specifically, very little. In the main, gathered from the experiences of living here, of the tourism publicity or the publicity materials and the tourism industry generates.
Yes, that's right.
But in terms of any sort of specific studies or surveys or something, as far as I'm aware, non-existent.
That was really my way of a lead in, because the next question is to do with a defendable urban boundary. You know, you would have been told I asked questions about that yesterday. Because I was trying to figure out what happens in a place like Queenstown Hill where there's, and you said in your rebuttal, it's just an apartment and a shared switch. If I was a member of the public looking at that, I would see the ONL just being nibbled away at. How would I appreciate the value of an ONL if that happens?
Precisely.
Yeah.
We're around Queenstown Hill is a very good example, because that's a case where the ONL is simply what's been left from the urban development and correcting up. And I mean, I think that that is a very good example of a boundary which is quite arbitrary in fact, and there is the danger then of it being in all the way.
Plan is always an arbitrary boundary. It's just that there's a need in, am I right? She told me, Mr. Chair, something like 96 or 97% of the district is ONL and ONS.
I've never calculated it, but I think that would be right. It's what is not ONL in this district, rather than what is.
Well, the other way around, it's easier to say there's 3% that isn't ONL.
Is that right? Yeah. But a considerable amount of that will also be National Park, of course.
And Lake Surface.
And Lake Surface.
It's just that from a planning point of view, enabling capacity for people to live and do their thing, then means that almost always it's a contest between ONL values and development.
That's right.
How is that reconciled? How is that reconciled in the process of developing a plan?
Well, I can't, well,
they're not in themselves.
The extent to which I was involved in the development of the plan was limited to the original landscape boundary study that I did, which was before the plan, well, before, as far as I was aware, the plan review process really had actually started. And then I've had input into the rural and the landscape chapters on an ongoing basis. But I think Queenstown raises a lot of really difficult questions, which is effectively what I was trying to say in my last comments, was that there are some areas where protecting the existing ONL boundary is protecting the existing ONL boundary from an approach to development is less of an important issue than other areas, in my opinion, as a landscape architect looking at the features that will be affected.
Yes, I understand that. And my final discussion point is yesterday we heard from Mr. Osborne about the enabled capacity for housing and so on. And this came up for 2038, 2048. That's an awful lot of street capacity. So when you as a landscape architect look at, say, an extension, a proposal to extend you as an area, what, if any, way does that enabled capacity have on your judgment?
Absolutely none.
You just look at the ONL.
Because the boundaries of Queenstown Township are reasonably arbitrary, or ranging from very good, reasonably arbitrary, whether a change in it would make it appear less arbitrary.
Sometimes it's what's not there that matters rather than what is. Yes. You're doing human design, yes. Right? Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Just following on from that, I wonder if you can help us with Arthur's point. I mean, I'm happy if it was a mapping error to know that that's what it was, or was it intentional in your landscape study that the urban suburb be included in the ONL?
Well, I don't think that it was either, to be honest, because when I did that study, low-density residential zones could not by definition be part of an ONL, so there was no request made for landscape boundary
to be drawn around or anything like that. So that explains it from your point of view.
Yes.
That could not be an ONL because it wasn't a zone that could be an ONL.
Exactly.
Right. So that assists us. Would the same apply to the rural visitor zone?
No. My understanding pre-Nanopore of the position in Queenstown Lakes is that the landscape objectives and policies apply to all of the rural zones, plural. So that included rural visitor, rural lifestyle, rural residential. So any non-tying activity within a rural lifestyle zone would be assessed in terms of the objectives and policies of the outstanding natural landscape.
Okay. So that explains, at least explains, that chunk and any other minor variations that may be the same thing. You may have determined fine without looking at the zoning. I know we're not considering a remarkable park, but that's another one that's coming to mind.
Remarkable park would be a bit of an anomaly in that regard.
And maybe we won't discuss it then.
Yeah.
Is that
one of the snapshots given us? Yes, I realise that. And I'm talking about the top three of the original study. But
I think it may have been the case that the decision, I could be wrong, but it may be the case that the decision on the ONL line and don't ask me to quote you what's on earth at the moment, but the environmental system predated the final decisions on the Remarkable Park. So that may be the case, I'm not certain.
Yeah. Okay, so in fact, in confirming the environmental decision, that just confirms what fundamentally turned out to be error in that instance, and it may be an error in other cases too.
I'm not sure. I don't understand what you mean by error.
Inconsistency.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Can we move on to the specific issue?
So, Mr. Chair, we'll now move on to considering the submissions in the Royal Group, essentially site by site. So, what I propose is that where each of the four witnesses have covered that particular rezoning submission in their highlight summary, they will read out that paragraph or two paragraphs at the time. Clearly there are some submissions that haven't been covered in the highlight summary. The panel may not have questions for them. So I propose we simply work through the submissions in the same order as Mr. Bust in the section 42A report.
Yes.
I'm happy to help orchestrate things. See how it goes.
I understand that, and I take it if you're run through that and they pick one up, we're just going to skip that unless any of us have questions on it.
Yes, so unless the panel has questions.
Yes. Yes, you need to have four files open at the same time.
So
I need we have AD. We also have an online system available to us so we can look up individual sites as we go through. So if it may be that we need to stop for us to get up the particular maps.
That's fine, we
can use it. Yeah. So it probably wouldn't be best if you walk us up there at this spot and then.
Okay.
Otherwise we'll all get confused.
Okay, well the first submission covering Mr. Buxton's evidence, Q4P Limited, submission 486. That sounds like an evidence summary of that particular submission.
Do we have any questions?
Which one is that?
We'll get that on from our system.
Sorry, I'll get into the trigger list.
Yes. Yeah. I've got no questions on either of them. I'm just thinking of my other questions for the same.
Fantastic. So, Lake Hawketing Station, Station Center, Submission 702.
I'm going to read from paragraph 2. Lake Hawketing Station Limited, Submission regarding reducing the SNA C24A near White Creek, appears to be based on the concentration graph SNA boundary. The boundary of the SNA in the PDP matches the submission's request. The submission can therefore be accepted, but no amendment is required. I think enough from confusion of the submission as to what the boundary was in the PDP. We have to look at the grand version. And then it got changed for what they want in the PDP.
Yes, that publicising the draft version has caused a lot of confusion in submissions to that process.
So, in paragraph 3 of my summary evidence, Lake Hawketing Station sought a realignment of SNA C24A to stop control through this area while maintaining the core values of the SNA. I have worked with the submitter on this amendment and note that the boundary was amended prior to notification of the SNAs. No further amendment to the SNA boundary is required to satisfy the submitter's request.
No, we looked at that.
Yeah, I have no questions on that.
Thank you. So, McDonald's submission number 409.
And I've got my paragraph 3 actually deals with the McDonald's and the Reavers, which is actually a number of and also I want to point out that the landscape evidence for those two submissions was given by Helen Nelson, which she's on here later.
Yes.
I'll run through the paragraph. In the case of the ONL adjoining the entrance to the remarkable Seafield Road, that was the two submission, the ONL boundary is recommended to be moved to align with the environmental decision, C-203-2004, on the McDonald land, that's to the south of the Seafield, and to follow the fence line that demarcates the change in landscape character between the cultivated valley and the more natural steep and alluvial fan slopes, and to exclude the dwelling and curtilage of 27 Kingston Road on the Reaver New Zealand Limited land. And that's to the north of the Seafield.
Yes. Do you have any questions?
No.
Thank you, New Zealand Custom Mining Limited, Submission 519.
Paragraph 4. The request by New Zealand Custom Mining to move the ONL for Mount Alfred, Glenorchy, from the river flats of the Dart River is recommended to be accepted as the proposed realignment is logical, and the river flatland is considered to be able to absorb the activities that could result in changing the river flat from ONS to ONL. So,
just remembering, is that one where the ONL actually came off the river flat and went up the hill a bit?
The mapping was, it's very crude, and it's in a very large scale, so it's quite difficult to see.
Well, the original notified line was drawn along the marginal strip boundary around the northwestern part of Mount Alfred, which is the land that the submission relates to. And in response to the submission has been moved to the toe of the slope, so that the flat some of the private or some of the leasehold land is now excluded from the ONS.
So I think what just looking at the maps, I think what was obvious on the ground is that there's a paper road there which seems to be closer to the bottom of the slope, and the ONS boundary was on the riverside of that paper road. And
is this to the north of the Dart Bridge or the south of the Dart Bridge?
To the east of the Dart River, and it's just north of the bridge. check whether what we were told on the site for the submission lined up.
I don't think the line of the submission lines up with the line that we're proposing the site.
Right. So that's probably part of it.
But the line of the submission is very, it's a very thick line, and I'm seriously wanting to.
Very confusing that. But I have some of it.
Yes. What about some of the new things? I think I'm shifting the line between the ONS and the ONR in terms of
what
kind of the mining might be doing, which I happen to know is prospecting because I know it's doing it. But what else might they do?
He's not to change the activity station.
He does?
For mining.
Yes.
From ONS, it's more restrictive towards ONR versus mining. For ONS to Lancashire and ONR. I looked at I've looked at in my evidence, the young activities changes the activity.
Yes, but I can't remember reading it.
I'm trying to recognize myself.
The only evidence in the text.
Yes.
But okay, you've reminded me to look at that thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it might be different. I think I'm building. So I say on page 11 of my sheet, 7.5. So mining prospecting is permitted in the ONL mining by handheld equipment and also up to 1,000 cubic metres per year mining aggregate for farming activities.
Oh, okay.
And that just excluded from the ONL. But you couldn't say that. Must mean about the line of movement. No, they do note, note on the second page, paragraph 7.6, that farm buildings are restricted discretionary in the ONF, whereas they're permitted up to 4 metres in height and 100 square metres in the ONL. And those taste changes in activity spaces were considered by Dr. Reed and Hurst's estimates as well, whether that land can absorb those sorts of activities.
Yes, thank you. Check. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I'm just keeping it. Right, so now I look at page 83 of Dr. Reed's evidence. She shows on there where the proposed mine is. And it's top of the river. Our understanding was correct, and we probably is recommending being moved as off the river flat. Yes. It is sort of here from the next one into the river.
To shift the ONL boundary back to the location under the ODC is recommended to be rejected as the previous location did not exclude the submitted land on the road. And the boundary of the PDP has actually been moved so as to include the council reserve. It's been brought south towards some township of Queensland Township. And I say the submitted had not provided evidence to dispute this recommendation, which is a 59 point. And moving it back to where it would not actually include their land unit, or take their land out of the ONR.
The submitted did appear in stream 2, but the evidence didn't really relate to the location of the ONR, even though that's what the submission was about.
Okay, it was just by the remarks apart from the evidence that relates to that, not the one.
Yes.
So now, Christina, Commission 764.
My paragraph 6. Mount Christina Limited request to locate and enlarge the rural residential zone at Camp Hill, Glenorchy, has been recommended to be accepted in part. I consider that the existing 15 hectare rural residential zone that rolls over an escarpment facing the Glenorchy Paradise Road is poorly located. Two options for amending the zone are considered. Option 1 is to shift the whole 15 hectare rural residential zone away from the escarpment and close to the top of Camp Hill. Option 2 is to zone all of the submitted sites, approximately 28 hectares, in rural residential, and include specific provisions within the zone to address primarily landscape concerns. My evidence in sheet recommended option 1 is being simple. However, following evidence and information, I've recommended zoning the whole 28 hectare site as rural residential Camp Hill, and to include specific provisions to restrict the maximum height to 5.5 metres, limit development to a maximum of 26 dwellings or allotments, and that's based on a reasonable capacity expectation for the rural residential zone in a remote location, and also an existing regal consent for 26 dwellings on the submitted site, and also traffic effects. I also require, recommend a setback of 20 metres from either the zone boundary or the top of the escarpment, where the escarpment actually encroaches on the zone.
Next, submission 764 relates to a possible rural residential zone adjacent to Camp Hill. Submission requests reconfiguring and extending the zone. I consider that some reconfiguration is appropriate to reduce the adverse effects on the landscape of the zone, but consider additional controls to be appropriate if the total zone area is to be extended.
So basically you're accepting the extent of the rezoning proposed with some additional control.
That's correct. And most additional controls were actually suggested, most of them by the Minister of Air Evidence. That would be 5.5 metre maximum height and the 20 metre setback from the boundary of the zone. But I've got to read myself, and also Amanda was concerned about the level of development that could be achieved on that extended zone, 28 hectares, and consider it should be restricted to what we think is an acceptable level of development on the existing, what you could achieve on the 15 hectare rural residential zone, which comes to about 26.
The alternative being to zone half of it in compliance. And that's the type of two territories.
Yeah.
So the current zone seems to have been somehow shift located over the escarpment that's closest to the Milky Road.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The expectation would be that it should be on the part of that escarpment, away from the escarpment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's poorly located at present. But the 15 hectare rural residential zone, as it's currently standing in the plan, had a consent to it where they managed to achieve 36 allotments very tightly developed. And the submitter is asking for 36 allotments to be provided for on that, on the entire site of zone rural residential. Our recommendation is it should be limited to 26. So 26 is, if you take into account all these calculations of development or yield for each zone, the calculation is to multiply the area by 0.68 or 58%, and then divide that by what the zone provides.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take the 50, if we accept that there's currently a 15 hectare zone on the site, multiply that by 0.68, divide by the minimum lot size, and it comes to about 25.5.
That's a very general sort of a formula.
Absolutely.
Does it have an urban formula rather than a rural formula?
Well, have you done any evaluation of the difference between of the 35 and 36 section for a particular site? Because it's a very general sort of approach, isn't it?
The evaluation is that, and I think I've mentioned this earlier, it's an unusual rural residential zone located where it's located. It's quite isolated. There's questions why I haven't yet been for me. And so, our recommendation is it should be limited to what would be, what would provide for a reasonable level of development in that location.
I'm just sort of anticipating that there's a little more, what progress is the third number, and wondering why, how you can justify the result.
Because of the location, we consider the, well, that 36 allotments on there, it does increase traffic. There's traffic issues, so if you say that currently, well, yeah, there's traffic issues in terms of there might be requirements to extend seal on the road and that those sort of, you know, those sort of things. Also, safety concerns, I understand, from the commander. And so the letter amount has got to be, has got to be kept contrary to providing for reasonable justification, but also reducing the effect on landscape. The reduced number spreads the development out over the whole area. And I do also mention a loan where that was provided by the submittal. They do have a current consent, which has basically developed the whole site with 26 allotments in it. There's a lot of open space to provide for development as well.
The existing one was a 26.
Yeah, the existing, so there was a consent granted earlier, I can't remember the date, for a total of 36 allotments.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That expired. That's expired.
Oh, that's expired.
They've got a current consent, which still is live, for 26 allotments.
On the same large
area? On the large area.
On the large area.
Yes, so 36 along the current zone. Which is,
I knew all this one. I didn't know all this one, but thank you.
Yeah, so the current zone, the 15 hectares, they did have a consent to provide 36. They've got a current consent, which basically is over their whole site, their 28 hectares, which is currently zoned partly rural residential, partly rural, for 26 allotments. Mm. And that development, it's spread out, there's lots of open space to it, and it's when you're looking at that, I think it's a much more appropriate type of development for that area.
I just made one point of clarification, because I was confused about the land ownership. The southwestern boundaries, I guess, where the zone bleeds over. I think, Dr. Reed, you mentioned that you thought it bled over into another property.
Yes.
I think I was
confused, because on the council's maps it appears that there's an uninformed legal road, but that actually there has been a tight road closure and that is actually part of the site. So
I believe it was all one part, one property. I think it had been subdivided. Yes, there's another major clarify that, but I think 28 hectares is definitely owned from the rest of the, what was it, the whole thing.
So there's no risk that the zoning that bled over the boundary is bled onto someone else's property, and we in fact have got those parties here.
I think that zone was all part of one property, though. They have understand the stuff of one lot, the 28 hectares.
But it's still held in the one ownership.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure, aren't you?
It sounds short.
But also,
I'll try to remind myself.
Bleeding over into the property, if it is only one person, they have so much longer project here.
No, so they still have, the zoning would have to stay on it.
Well, or would it be able to be moved because of the submission that seeks it? The submitter undertook to do the upgrading and sealant, which your opposition remain?
No, it was the issue related to dust nuisance and sort of safety of the unsealed road.
Right. I was wondering when we looked at the zoning purpose of rural residential and objective 22.2.1, isn't the test whether the land can absorb development? Rather than whether it may alter the rural character.
Is there actually a difference? No, you're quite wrong. I'm sorry. Well, you get on people's character, it doesn't matter whether you can see it or not. Once you change the character by including
the
media urban development, then you change the character.
But the rural residential zone doesn't have its objectives about protecting the rural character. The location of the zone is an area which can absorb that's what I was really getting to. If you think that's the same thing, that's fine. You can explain it.
Well, I'm not a person, as I do. Can I find the purpose of planning? Can you?
It's the purpose for a rural residential zone.
Definitely subjective
and... No, I don't think so. and it's better to keep it contained and as close to cancer as possible.
Would it be better to increase the distances from the terrace edge?
I think 20 metres is adequate. Which I think is what the same as I
Osborne yesterday talked about development charts. One of the things I noticed in the rural area was how many zones are sitting there with latent potential, and what's the development chart? Will they ever happen?
The
accommodation, the big stations, you know?
This is what I'm understanding from the submitter that day is they've got two sections, usually three stages of the subcommission. That's what I was reading
there.
Thank you.